It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, Alicia from the Lorehounds here to break down Peacemaker Season 2, Episode 5, Back to the Suture with Fatal Accuracy, just a 0.002% chance of error.
This is Comics Versus, talks the DC Universe. Your guys to Peacemaker's personal growth. I'm Jean, protector of the Prime Meta Duck.
And I'm Aaron from Radioactive Ramblings, here to call out some characters' questionable behaviors and say a not-so-sad goodbye to one character in particular.
So, if you want a spoiler-free preview of what this show is all about, check out Season 1 Recap. The beginning of that was spoiler-free. For these regular episodes, the three of us just jump right in. Full spoilers. We can bring up also any DC movies, TV, and comics, too. And just to know, before we begin, though, before we get into our Peacemaker talk, I just want to sidestep real quick because Jean and I released another episode this week about Eyes of Wakanda, which is a Marvel property, which thus makes it a Disney property. And I just want to say, at the time when we recorded it, and I think perhaps when we released it, I don't know, the news had not yet broken about what's going on with Jimmy Kimmel. So we didn't mention it in our episode. So I just want to take a moment here just to call out Bob Iger, head of Disney, for a wider censorship problem going on. And as I've said before, it's not just Disney, but it definitely is Disney. And this is a prime case. And I just want to tell people who want to cancel their Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN subscriptions, I completely understand and even encourage that, because Disney only listens to their wallet on these matters. So that's how we got here in the first place, because they think that's how they're going to make more money. So the only way to get out of it is to show that public opinion is a bigger threat to their existence than the pressure they're receiving from the White House. So definitely support anyone who wants to cancel these things. However, I also just want to shout out that we support the creators of these shows as well, because they do tend to be the ones who keep getting screwed in all of this. Things are getting tougher and tougher for all the writers and producers and directors and everyone working in this industry. So I just want to say, if you do still want to support the work, we are still going to be supporting the work. There are other ways to watch. I won't say any more about that right here. But I will just say that we are also happy to spoil for you if that's how you prefer to keep up with the story. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything either of you want to add to that.
Well said. Well said. We support the creators, but we don't support the capitulators. So yeah.
Definitely. And I think that it's really great to see just how much of an impact individuals who are participating in this boycott have already made, just with choosing to vote with their dollars and where not to vote with their dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get distracted by the Mandalorian and Grogu trailer. We're excited about it.
They tried. They tried.
We can be excited about it and still keep calling Disney out.
Yes. And be critical and demand that they do better. And that's what I think we strive to do with all our coverage, because we talk about a lot of different things that the shows themselves bring up. Mm-hmm. If you're watching Andor and not talking about fascism, then you're not really watching Andor, in my opinion. Right. So, support how you can, protest in the ways that you can, and demand better. And the more of us demand better, the sooner the better we'll get here.
Yeah. Yeah. Our voices together are louder and demand more attention.
So much louder.
Absolutely.
But we are here today to talk about a show that is not made by Disney. So I just wanted to take that little aside. But and may, by the way, WB stay out of Warner Brothers, stay out of Paramount's and Skydance's hands. I don't know if people saw that, but Skydance now wants to, they just bought Paramount and now they want to buy Warner Brothers, which includes HBO, and that would subject them to more of this same sort of
censorship.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, anyway, well, we're living in a free HBO world, and I can't believe I was so mad at Zaslav for so long, and now he's kind of backed off of things. And now I'm like, HBO's one of the good ones again. So, Disney, you can be a good one again, too. It's possible.
Where can I get a QUC door, please?
Yeah, be
somebody
careful.
Find me one. Ping me, hit me, DM me. You found one, let me know. I'm coming through. I got a lot of family and friends. We're all joining.
Be careful, because that best universe ever might not be as good as it looks on the surface.
But we'll make it work. We'll make it work.
But so this episode of Peacemaker, episode 5, is called Back to the Suture, but nobody got stitches. Aaron, do you have a thought on what Back to the Suture means for this?
I took that to mean that whatever tear in reality existed when Peacemaker opened this door, that now it's closed. That was my interpretation.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Say Peacemaker probably needs stitches now, but yeah, no, I like that interpretation.
For sure.
So the tagline for this episode is Red's ritual reveals Eagly's location while Flag confronts Peacemaker as Peacemaker makes a life-changing choice. Adebayo and Vigilante try to unite the 11th Street kids. Aaron, let's stay with you. What are your hot takes on this episode overall?
What really stuck out to me was how much more trust Adebayo had in Harcourt than I did during this episode. When she tells Harcourt, "You really are exactly who I think you are." It was a really nice moment between the two of them, and I was not as much on board. I thought that Harcourt had definitely betrayed some big trust in Chris and the rest of the 11th Street kids. And then I really don't buy Flag's justifications. I think that everyone else watching would probably agree with me on this one, so it might not be as hot of a take as I'm making it out to be, but I'm not buying his whole excuse of Chris is a danger to the public. And I also wasn't expecting Chris to be so mature about the whole Rick Flag situation. He really does understand that this guy is angry about his son, and he can empathize with it because he lost his father, which it was a very horrific thing for him, even though his dad was maybe the worst person I've seen on television this year. But still, he can empathize in some way with Rick Flag Sr.
Right. And also with Harcourt and the fact that he's like, did you have a thing with Rick Flag Jr. in this universe? Is that why you can't be with me? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, definitely showing maturity. Jean, what about you? What did you think overall of this one?
First and foremost, goodbye and good riddance, Red St. Wild. I will not miss you. I don't think Comic Dumb will miss you. I don't think anyone will miss you, Mr. Red. That was the most unnecessary character that I've seen this year. I still don't understand why. I probably will never understand why, and I'm just glad that it's over. I think Chris is really trying. He's really trying to be better and find better, and that's a journey that, you know, at some point a lot of people, I know I myself have gone through, to be better and to find better. And that's something that, you know, what Aaron said takes a real level of maturity to do. And I commend him for doing that. And I commend the show for making me see that. Right? Because you guys know I'm a vowed Peacemaker hater. But, you know, with that hate that I have for the character, they're really making me see how the character is struggling to find himself, right? Amidst all the horrible things he's done. He's a human being who's trying to find better, and I appreciate that.
I mean, you're also a hardcore hater. Who did you hate more?
This season or just in the in show general, period? Mm-hmm. In general, I think would be Peacemaker.
Okay.
I think I would hate, I would say it would be Peacemaker that holds the most, I have the most animosity towards. I also think Hardcore, piggybacking off of what you just asked me, had shown some great layers in this particular episode. The gruff, grumpy, you know, leave me the hell alone person that I've come to expect wasn't really there. You know, the exterior was still, I will fuck you up at the drop of a dime, mm-hmm. but you can see that there are other emotions working. There are other thoughts. There are other feelings. There are other concerns that she has, especially with what Aaron said with her and Adebayo, and how Adebayo trusts her to a level that I would not. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes a long way with me towards how I'm viewing her as a character, right? And then I have to say Flurry, totally unexpected. You know, for him to be like, oh, I don't know if we're doing the right thing here. You know what I mean? Like, should we be killing him in the cell? Should we be, you know, letting him die right now like this? So, again, we see these characters have these, you know, singular moments of clarity where they're not all bad. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take away from the bad that they've done or said. But it's still not hopeful, but true that even the worst of persons at times can, you know, be right like a broken clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like in this show that each character, you know, none of them are perfect. In fact, they're all horrible in different ways, as you've said before. But it's specific, the ways in which they're horrible and the ways in which they're not. And just because someone is racist doesn't mean that they are immoral. Just because someone can't take a joke doesn't mean that they are the one who follows the rules, you know?
I would say racist is immorality, so.
Yeah, sure, of course. But I mean, to say Flurry, obviously he said a lot of racist things, but it doesn't mean that in this particular instance that he's like gonna let someone die. And I think, you know, even though he's been horrible to Judah Master, I don't think he would let him die in this situation either. I'm right. Getting the feeling that Flurry, that's not the type of horrible that he is.
Right. Mm. That's more, I don't know, a shell almost. But it's yet to be seen. He's still terrible.
Yeah, I think overall this was easily one of my favorite episodes of the season so far. There was a real emotional roller coaster. It answered a lot of questions so far. And it's, you know, as I thought it was going to be, this is the real mid-season finale. This is the real turning point for the season. And obviously we've been teased a lot by the next three episodes. Apparently, like, almost nobody has seen the last three episodes. So I'm like, get it in my veins immediately. I was worried at one point this episode they might not follow him through the door, but it seems like they will in the next one. So I'm like, phew, I really want to see the 11 Street Kids all together in that other universe and just see them deal with what we expect is the situation. I think they're building up to a hardcore Sasha fight and it's going to be pretty badass.
Yeah. Shout out to you guys for correctly predicting. I was just going to say, shout out to you guys for correctly predicting the whole cyborg.
Yes. Yes. That was a highlight for me. I whooped. as Alicia knows, sometimes I whoop and I whooped. I said, ooh. Oh, look at the eyes. I wanted to see the hand transform, all type of shit. But yeah, you know, hopefully we get that.
This is step one.
Yeah. OMAC, brother I. This is tantalizing, you know, like I'm nerding out as I'm watching it, just thinking about the things that could be on the horizon, you know, really, really cool stuff.
And also James Gunn was asked, well, they were in an interview together, he and Saul Rodriguez, who plays Sacha Bordeaux, and they were asked about if her backstory is tied to Batman. And she's like, well, no, that's not brought up. And James Gunn said, yet.
So, because Batman exists and has existed for a long time in this universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know he's around. We saw his silhouette and got references in Creature Commandos.
So, yeah, okay.
So, Aaron, what are your thoughts on the Red Saint Wild death and actual Prime Eagle reveal?
Good riddance to Red Saint Wild. I've been a hater since the beginning. I have to agree with Jean that I don't think we're ever going to find his purpose. I think that this was just a strange thing that they decided to include, but the Eagly reveal was pretty awesome. I enjoyed the fact that he was the Prime Eagle or something similar to it.
He's a meta duck.
Exactly, a meta duck. But yeah, he won't be missed in my mind.
No, I mean, I'm going to throw
you
out a
couple.
You had
hope, Alisa. You had hope.
I had hope. You did. I'm going to throw out a couple more weak defenses and say, you know, the season's not over. But after listening to the official podcast with James Gunn, mm-hmm. and they also had Michael Roker as a guest this week, I think this might be it. Okay, all right. Let's get there one at a time. First is I learned this week about, I didn't know the name of this concept, but the DC Comics concept of the Red.
Yes.
Do you want to speak more on that?
No, go ahead. It's just, okay. Go ahead.
I mean, it's just like, all I know about it is that it's this sort of mystic other level. I called it astral projection last week, what Red Saint Wild was doing, but it is a way in which various characters apparently communicate to like their animal familiars, things like that. Am I representing that correctly?
Well, the Reds particularly are people who are in tune with animals. So think of Gar from like Beast Boy. He gets his powers from the Red.
Okay.
Like he's able to transform and into any animal that he can think of. That power comes from the Red. The just like we have the green, like poison ivy is tapping into the green. It's mm-hmm. These are elemental forces in the DC universe that allow people to exert those forces on the known universe. In the physical universe.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Okay. Yeah.
Like your boy is part of the green.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
You know who I'm talking about.
Your favorite boy. Man Thing. But yes. That's Marvel. But Swamp Thing, I guess, would
Swamp
be part
Thing,
of the
Swamp green. Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think that Red Saint Wild, the Red, you know, there's a connection between Red Saint Wild and the Red? That's what we saw with the whole astral projection thing where he seemed, or did he warg into an eagle? No, he was kind of like, he warged into a bird to spy on Eagly. Was that right? Or flying? No, he was just flying astral projecting through the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's possible, but I hope not because I don't want to see this character again. So,
well, it doesn't mean we have to see him again, but maybe that's what was happening.
To your point, it might be an introduction to these other sorts of, you know, planes of power that exist in the DC universe.
Okay.
Could be.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I just want to also shout out something that Satuichi said before episode 5 on the Discord. He said, so here's my why a white dude should play the Eagle Hunter. In my mind, he's a villain. If you had a native actor playing him and talking about saving my people, I'm on his side somewhat. As a white guy saying this, I'm like, no, you're an eagle hunting piece of shit. Now, it might be interesting to have a quote unquote likable hunter, but I don't think they wanted to go down that road. It might be off. But that's my feelings as of now. And I think that episode 5 confirmed that, where it seemed like, James Gunn just wanted this to be a hated character so that he could kill him and it would be a quote unquote satisfying kill. Did you find it satisfying seeing the eagles peck him to death? Either of you?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think between this show and the final season of Righteous Gemstones, this actor has cemented a place of hatred in my heart. So,
oh God, so I'd like to see him.
But because he's doing a great job at being hateable, sure. not because I don't like the actor. Yeah.
It was fun to hear his stories with he and James Gunn are clearly old friends on the podcast this week. They're talking about apparently Michael Roker is always carrying guns where it's legal. So like he wasn't carrying them in the studio, he said. And there was this story where he tried to he was going to James Gunn's house and he was trying to like scare them through the window, like knocking on the glass or something, you know, banging on the glass all of a sudden. But he scared a skunk and got sprayed twice. The official podcast is fun for stories like this, but it also just like it made me think like he is a bit Red St. Wild in real life.
Oh gosh.
Totally.
Maybe he's not claiming to be anything other than he's not culturally appropriating anyone, but apparently this was a role where James Gunn initially went with someone else and then was, you know, halfway through the season, like Vigilante last year, he's like, this is not the right match, and he asked Michael Roker to come do it instead. My feelings about it is, you know, I was hoping in a way there would be an Earth 2 version just to make it make sense. But now I feel like that indeed the whole arc was just to have this hated character and then kill him off. In that case, yeah, I'm with you guys. We didn't need that. And we could have had a character who was not an Eagle Hunter or just had an Eagle Hunter character and then had a native character step in and talk about the Prime Eagle. You know, and that would have, I don't know. It's, if this is where it ends, it just isn't satisfying to me, this so little mini arc, which is a rare miss for me on this show.
Yeah. I guess my whole thing with the character is that just cast a person who, an indigenous person in the role, you can have, I'm a black man and I can watch a black villain on screen. you know?
Yeah, sure.
I can see another person of color as a villain, as a hero. And I think
I would be upset if they made it an Eagle Hunter, but they didn't have to make
it. They don't have to make it an Eagle Hunter, but it's okay to express the different, to give people the opportunity to play different roles. That's all I'm saying. So yes, I don't want an Eagle Hunter as a Native American because that would be ridiculous. But if the Eagle Hunter is a part of the show, then just make him a Eagle Hunter. Don't make him somebody who's trying to be in tune with, you know, Native American culture. It just didn't land well with me. You could have made Red St. Wild anybody, but to have him dress up, to have him, you know, proclaim that he's, you know, part of, not part of a tribe, but he was, you know, basically shown the way.
Yeah, but they didn't even explain that. So
I'm no, like, I know, oh. Right? So it's just poor all the way around because all I'm left with is this white guy cosplaying as a Native American, talking about Native American life and rituals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And beliefs. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. In the end, we don't have to put Michael. I like Michael Roker. We don't. Have
no,
to
we
put
love him in Michael everything. Roker here. We love Michael Roker. Mm-hmm.
And apparently, James Gunn's like, this doesn't mean you can't have another role in the DCU that looks different.
Please.
And in Michael Roker's defense, I think he added more depth to the character, it sounds like, for example, his death scene in this episode, James Gunn, the way he wrote it, basically, because again, he wrote all these episodes, the way he wrote it is that he was sort of begging for his life, whereas Michael Roker, the way he interpreted it and played it, and what I read when I watched it, is that he had, you know, he had a change of heart, had a reckoning. He's like, oh no, I've been doing the wrong thing. This is all wrong, you know, and then he dies. So credit to Michael Roker for that. Yeah. I do wonder if So we've been talking about the IMDb scores as we go, mm-hmm. and they've been changing a lot week to week. And so now episode 4 is tied for the lowest rated episode with episode 2. And it's interesting because episode 2 is the episode where they really introduced Flurry and his full racist, sexist shtick.
And everybody loves Flurry.
I think maybe not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't look like it.
Episode 4, the lower rating might have to do with Red St. Wild.
I can see that.
So this is the shortest episode of the season so far, 37 minutes. We don't know how long the last three are going to be. This one was directed by Alethea Jones, who's done work on like Dollface, Shining Veil. She was the executive producer for Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies, and also Mrs. Davis, which is a favorite on this podcast network.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she did a great job. Did you guys notice someone brought it to my attention on Blue Sky that the dance opening changes a little bit each week? There are different, slightly different details.
No,
I haven't noticed either. It's really interesting.
Like, for instance, in episode 4, Red St. Wild got a little solo shtick.
I didn't pick that up at all.
Yeah, I didn't either until someone pointed out. Gotta do a side-by-side video of all of them when the season's done.
Yeah, I'm going to be paying more attention next week now.
yeah. I got to go back and watch them all. Also, Jessica on Discord said, I've started to cry during the opening sequence. That song is really sad, and these poor babies all have so much trauma. Someone get them therapy.
Gosh, yes.
And yeah, the song lyrics, they really like, oh man, I feel them. I feel them hard at this point in my life. Like, and the song is just relentlessly stuck in my head 24/7 recently.
Oh my gosh.
I can't get another song in my head. Are you guys having that trouble? No?
Just me? No.
Every once in a while, it'll pop into my head, and then I have to wonder, why is Foxy Shazam where it's not supposed to be?
Oh, Jillian, it's a lovely... Anyway, on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we go back, let's talk about the episode itself in detail. See you in a sec.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Funeral friendliness. This week's cold open flashes back to the conclusion of Rick Flagg Jr.'s DCU funeral. Rick Flagg Sr. slides up to Harcourt, telling her to call him Rick, that he knows about them. How do we say that? Their closeness, the closeness of their relationship. Harcourt tells Rick that she can't divulge exactly how his son died, but promises that she will do everything in her power to bring the person who killed his son to justice.
So, yeah, now we know that's what Rick wanted Harcourt to remember. She told him after the funeral. But things have clearly changed now. I mean, Aaron, what do you think Harcourt's thinking when she thinks back to saying that to Rick now the way things are?
I think she is definitely thinking about Amanda Waller. And this whole sequence made me wonder if we were going to see some sort of appearance from Amanda Waller towards the end of the season, and if she is going to be held accountable by Harcourt or Flagg or anyone, which I don't think so. I think she's going to live to cause more problems another day, but, which is what I want from her. It did make me think that she might show up in this season, which I hadn't initially expected. What about you guys?
I would say she may face consequences that set up another show. But I do wonder, you know, the fact that Harcourt said, I will hold the person responsible. And then she also said to Rick later, you know, Amanda's the one who, or Waller, she would call her Amanda. A-dubs, that's what Akamos called her. Anyway, A-dubs, she's the one who commanded Peacemaker to kill him. So I'm wondering if Harcourt is shifting, you know, she has this cognitive dissonance of like, I don't want anything bad to happen to Chris. So she's shifting the blame to Waller, especially since Rick keeps telling her that Waller's like out for her, gunning for her, trying to ruin her career. Jean, do you believe that?
Yeah. When she said, much like Aaron just said, when she said she's going to bring the person who did it to justice, I thought mm-hmm. Waller. And it was nothing that was said in that has happened, that's happened in this season, mm-hmm. but it's just everything that they went through preceding this season. Mm-hmm. Like I had all of that stuff in my head when she said it, and I was like, oh, she's talking about Waller. She's not talking about Chris.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I did have, you know, I famously have not had much sympathy for Rick Flagg Sr. this season, but I did have some sympathy when he said this at the funeral.
Ricky spends his whole life in service of his country. They sent him overseas in the back of a VW bug with 1,000 fucking costume clowns to fight a giant starfish. We all fucked up, Amelia. We could have been accountants.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's right, but it's still, I'm getting like, okay, I don't know. In this whole thing, and this is also paired with something that happens with Sasha later in the episode, this whole like, oh, call me Rick. Like, is he, I can't decide whether he's trying to act fatherly toward Amelia or whether he's like trying to, you know, bring the daddy energy like we see
both
later with Sasha.
Both.
Yeah.
You saw him in Creature Commandos.
That's icky.
But you saw him in action in Creature Commandos.
Yeah, the Princess of Pakolistan.
Yeah.
But she, in that case, she was the aggressor.
But we're talking about Rick.
Yeah. I mean,
so both.
He gave in, not that, you know, he gave in somewhat easily.
He didn't fight it off.
He did for a second. He was like, you know, I'm here to protect you,
right,
and we should not. And okay, he said no a few times.
Yeah, but to your question, he's doing both. He's playing both of those roles very willingly.
I think that Rick Flagg, to kind of jump off of what you guys have been saying, I think it's so interesting the context that this episode adds with that whole funeral scene, where he tells Amelia, you're always going to be family. Mm-hmm. But we've seen in previous episodes, his support of Amelia in getting her job back, or just in general, is now dependent on whether or not she can deliver one of her friends to Rick Flagg.
Right.
It's just a complete abandonment of her, and highlights how empty his words are.
It's manipulation.
Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's giving me the ick about it. And, you know, a lot of people have been like, I cannot buy Frank Grillo as Joel Kinnaman's father. So I had to look up their ages. I was like, Grillo looks young for his age, which he does. He's 60. But still, 60 is not that old. And Kinnaman's 45. So that means that he would be 15 when he had him, which is totally possible.
It happens.
But is not a story that we've been told. We don't know their story, but... Yeah, for the people who say they look like they're too close in age, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But do you think it's like father, like son with Harcourt saying, she kind of implies that Rick was sleeping around. She says, your son loved a lot of women. So it sounds like more than just her and June.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like senior and junior. And junior took a lot of senior's ways.
Yeah.
For better and worse, right?
Yeah. Well, what did he say? Was that in Superman or some, or whatever? Or no, I guess it was in Creature Commandos. He said, my son was the best parts of me, or the better version of me, basically.
Right. Wow. But Amelia is saying, hold up. hold your horses here. Like, there's some other parts to him as well.
Yeah. Don't idealize him.
you know. And I agree with, I don't think, I don't think Rick Flagg Sr. is a good person. I just understand why he hates Chris. I get that. And I get him going all out to end Chris in any way that he could. I get that. I understand that.
Yeah.
But he's not a good person.
Okay.
As evidence, when he turned Supes in to the government, he was like, oh, well, you know, no trial. I can't do anything for you.
Hmm.
Like he will.
Yeah.
He will,
yeah. No, that was when I started to hate him. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not going to be a defender of justice and liberty and all of that shit. That's not who Rick Flagg Sr., at least to this point, I don't see that. So to me, he's not a good person.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I guess we're also not going to see June this season, because if so, I think we maybe would have gotten a glimpse of her at the funeral.
Yeah.
So we got confirmation June exists in this universe, but she was gone, or why wasn't Frank Grillo talking to her? Obviously, he was talking to Amelia because he was actually just trying to get information from her.
Right.
But, yeah. Where was June?
Yeah. I think this show is already doing so much setup work for the new DCE. Is it the DCU or DCEU?
DCU is the new one. DCEU DC. Is the old one.
Thank you. This show is doing so much setup work for the new DCU that introducing even more characters might kind of dilute what we already have.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that. Or, maybe he doesn't want to deal with casting, but there's got to be a reason he mentioned June. Yeah. Or is it just to characterize who Rick Flagg Jr. is, that he was cheating?
Yeah, I thought it was that the latter, not the former.
Okay. Okay. All right. Aaron, do you want to set up the next part?
Sure. A date in the park. Peacemaker arrives at the park for his meeting with Harcourt, clearly expecting heat. Apparently, Harcourt's use of the word copacetic in her response to his request to meet was a warning, but he ignored it because he needs to know whether he has any shot with this Harcourt before he gives up on this universe altogether. Harcourt vehemently denies having any romantic feelings for him, despite the events of the mysterious boat party referenced throughout the season. And she confirms that the reason she thinks she can never be with Chris is that she and this universe's Rick Flagg Jr. were indeed so, quote-unquote, close before Peacemaker killed him. While Judo Master and others try to take down Chris with a trank gun, a vengeful Rick Flagg Sr. orders Sasha, revealed to be a cyborg, to shoot and kill. Harcourt takes Chris down, choking him out to prevent Sasha from using lethal force.
So, do we agree that Rick Flagg Sr. is a villain at this point?
No,
he's the villain in Chris's story, but I don't know if he's a villain to the world.
I mean, he wants to kill someone without booking him. For me, that's like full villain. How do we get more villain than this?
Rick Flagg Sr. is not a villain.
Why not?
He is definitely
just because not a he's motivated, but most villains have motivation. Good villains have motivation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I can't see him as a villain.
He's a villain. I understand why he's a villain, but he's a villain. Like, I also understand why Poison Ivy is a villain. I love her for it. I back her for it. But she's still a villain.
I don't know. Even Rick Ivy, Flagg, I don't know if she's a villain.
Senior's not even an anti-hero at this point. Like, in Creature Commandos, he could have been.
He's just bent on vengeance.
Yeah. Yeah.
But vengeance does not make one a villain, does it?
At the cost of all else, I think he would put the entire world at risk for his vengeance at this point.
I don't think so.
He just doesn't care.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think he would risk everyone else's life that we have come to know in the show in order to kill Chris.
I mean, I think he's already shown that he will, but okay.
How?
All right, we'll see. We'll see. What do you mean you how? He has at no point shown any protectiveness toward anyone.
Yeah.
I don't think he cares about a single person other than himself and his son.
Okay. All right.
Do you think that he genuinely believes this dimensional door is as big of a threat as he's making it out to be? Because that's the question for me that determines whether or not what he's doing is villainous.
Yes.
I don't think he would be going after it as hard, or in the same way if it were anybody else.
I think he would be going after it as hard, but not in the same way.
Okay.
Because I think Argus believes that this is a threat to humanity, or at least, you know, their part of the world. Coming on the heels of what they saw in the Supes movie, in the Superman movie, to what Lex did. So I think they would take this as seriously as they seem to be taking it.
I don't know. I think it means maybe something they would take seriously, but I think it is an excuse. Yeah.
Okay.
What about Sasha? What do we think about her on the villain scale? Because she's like, you know, we'll talk about this later, of course, but Rick Flagg Sr. kind of walks back. He's like, oh, I didn't mean to kill him, you know? And Sasha's like, no, you should. You should kill him. Like, damn,
Sasha. That's a cyborg talking. That's a cyborg talking. You know what I mean? I mean, I would think that I don't think Sasha is a full-on villain, just like I don't think Rick Flagg is a full-on villain. I think in the service of what they believe in, like Sasha believes in Rick Flagg. Rick Flagg believes in whatever he believes in. So she might push back, but at the end of the day, she's going to follow orders, right? I don't know if that makes her a villain right now. Could that potentially come back to bite everyone in the ass? Absolutely. That willingness, the willingness to just follow orders is never just a good thing, which is the point of Chris. Right? The willingness to just follow orders will lead you down this path, right?
I mean, in this case, she's even saying like, no, you should issue more. She's the one suggesting the lethal orders. So she's going a step further even. But I don't know her well enough to declare her a villain yet the way I am with Rick Flagg Sr., but she's definitely on my villain watch list.
Okay.
What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I would agree that she's on the villain watch list. She hasn't fully made it there yet. I think my main takeaway from this episode regarding her was that the relationship between her and Rick Flagg makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I want to know what she was like prior to her cyborg accident.
Right. And speaking of people acting villainously, and this one, I don't think he's a villain, but God damn, Economos, this conversation.
What's the story with this Bordeaux bitch?
Cyborg. Yeah, part robot. She was in a plane crash, all crushed up, and Argus replaced half her body with machinery.
Jesus, okay.
Yeah, I hate her so much. I used a pre-op photo of her mangled body as the screensaver on my phone for a while.
That's fucked up.
Well, I'm not the one who made my brain.
God. What did we say to that? What did you say to that? Oh, Lordy.
Yeah. Economus is as awful as the rest in a different way.
Yes. Is Judo Master a villain?
I mean, he's an antagonist.
He's a villain.
I don't think he's a villain.
Why?
Last season, his motivation was he thought that he was saving the world in a way. And that is definitely not Rick Flagg Sr.'s motivation.
A lot of villains think they're saving the world.
Sure. So, but I do have more sympathy for Judo Master than Rick Flagg Sr.
Why? Because you like Cheetos?
Because his motives seem more moral to me. I don't actually like Cheetos, but if I did, it would definitely
be hot Cheetos.
Flavor hot.
What about you, Aaron? Is Judo Master a villain?
I don't know if I would quite classify him as a villain. I think this guy, to me, a villain is someone that if they existed in the real world, I would genuinely be afraid of them. Not that Judo Master couldn't mess me up seriously, but
why would he?
Yeah, it's hard for me to be afraid of someone who likes hot Cheetos that much, you know?
But he ran out this episode, so ooh, that might be his villain origin story. I love, by the way, in this park scene, they have the code colors. So we have, it's interesting, just I'm assuming they chose their own. And so Fleury goes by Ivory, which must be an Ebony and Ivory reference. Meanwhile, Sasha, she goes with maroon, and she's literally dressed in head to toe maroon. So, and she is like the most literal character, which is probably part of that cyborg trait. And it's interesting. So Agent Klein, aka Ponyboy, goes with aquamarine, which is a way dialed up version of the grayish blue that he was wearing. So it's almost like, does he see himself as more vibrant than he really is? And then Judo Master, who Kung Fu Bulbasaur, who famously dresses in green, goes with fuchsia, the exact opposite of the color that he wears. Do you think there's any meaning into this, or am I overthinking?
I don't know. I didn't think about it when they said the code names. I just took it for face value.
Yeah, I thought it was just James Gunn having a little fun with writing their code names.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. Judo Master maybe is saying that he's the opposite of what he appears.
Well, he's changed.
And we know
he's the opposite
Sasha's
of a
literal
villain. Because he appears maybe villainous to me.
Okay. Well, there you go. Were you surprised when we got the code word reveal that Hardcore is like, I told you copacetic, don't come?
I was. Because I really thought going into this episode that she set him up. I didn't think she was doing, she was, yeah. I didn't think she was
you
trying
didn't
to
have
look
the
out
faith
for
Chris. In her.
I did not.
Does.
I did not. Yeah. I did not.
Totally. This was my wake up call to have a little bit more faith in Hardcore.
I knew it. I'm with Adebayo. She's the person I thought she was. She took Chris down to save him, and Economos is right. It's pretty cool that she can do that. Does that mean that she is on the level of Judo Master? Because I can't think of anyone else on this show who could take down Chris like that.
Well, I don't consider Chris like a great, like, hand-to-hand combatant.
Oh, he's good at, he's a good marksman.
He's good with weapons, but I don't think, you know, in a fist fight, like, he's not, I don't think he's in the top 10 in the DC universe as far as that's concerned. So I think without weapons, you can take him.
I mean, also just the fact that she is much smaller than him. And, you know, we already said with Judah Master, we believe.
Exactly.
That we believe that. But do we have the same feeling with her?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Totally, you train no matter who you are. You get that training and you become efficient with your hands. You take people out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That did not feel fake to me at all. Like, oh, how could she do this? No. I really believe she could do this.
Yeah. Yeah. The fight choreo in general on this show has been great.
Mm-hmm.
Even the eagle fight choreo.
Yeah, totally. I like to think about it in terms of she's had real secret agent training, and Chris was trained by his father, who we've established is kind of
just
nothing.
An angry hick.
Like he'll, you know, give Chris a gun and forget about it. Give him a weapon. You know what I mean? And that's your ass. But like going at it with, no. Like Batman would take, Bruce Wayne would take Chris out. And like I could start naming names that would beat Chris up without superpowers that are not metahumans. Yeah.
All right. I would like to see him fight Batman. That would be kind of fun.
Oh, gosh.
With their gadgets. Yeah. Well, Batman would have gadgets. Chris would just be like picking up
trying to shoot him.
Road cones or something.
Yeah. He wouldn't even last 5 minutes with that.
I do think that this park, the fact that Chris went to the park to meet Hardcore, I mean, he's smart enough that he would know regardless that there's a good chance there's a trap there.
Yeah.
But she specifically warned him and he still did it. I think this shows that his first choice was really this Hardcore.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is where his heart is. He's leaving this he's leaving this universe because, you know, it's too painful.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where his heart is. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I just feel like, I mean, I'm not rooting for him another hardcore. And I feel like, obviously, we think that there's more going on with her. But I think that even before he discovers that, I'm predicting that he's going to be like, no, this is not the same. You're not the same person.
Yeah. I am trying very hard watching this show to separate the alternate universe characters from their primary universe counterparts and not conflate the two with one another. I think it's really easy to start to map the personality traits of one universe onto the other, and we don't for sure know how it's going to line up yet.
Right. Right. It's a question of nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I looked up the name of the park where they met. It's Kupperberg Park, and this is named after Paul Kupperberg, who is, you know, is a big DC guy. He created a lot of things, but the thing that seems most interesting in the context of this show is he's a creator of Checkmate, which is an offshoot of Project X. And so the comics version included characters like Waller, Peacemaker, Vigilante, Sasha Bordeaux, Mr. Terrific, G.I. Robot. Also, by the way, Huntress, which was in the DCEU, Maxwell Lord, which obviously is in this, but I don't know. We'll see. Alan Scott is another Green Lantern. I don't know that yes. Green Lantern, but and Lois Lane, even at one point, was a member of the team. Nobody named Grant, because I'm still thinking about that conversation where they're like, how is Mr. Grant's test like positive? Oh, I was hoping it wasn't cancer. We still don't know what that's about. Are you familiar with Checkmate? Are you thinking there could be a link or hopeful or?
Yeah, I think there could be a link because they're like, they were set up like a, you know, almost like a, not an offshoot of the project, the Task Force X,
mm-hmm.
but sort of like a, you know, like almost like helpers, like okay. they're checking, making sure that Task Force X is doing what they need to do. Like if we need to call them in, we call them in. You know what I mean?
Okay. So they're like doing what, you know, Sasha Bordeaux and
yeah.
stuff should be yeah. doing. Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
So they're like a side, you know, Waller has so many moving pieces in, mm-hmm. in the comics. Like she's always like, she has one thing here, but there's another part of that thing somewhere else. She's like a Hydra, you know, just popping up with different, you know, organizations and that are maybe redundant, but just to have contingencies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think in the context of the DCU, this could be important.
Yeah. Maybe they're sowing some seeds for a potential season 3 plotline with this.
Right. Right.
Maybe.
And this Waller show that was in the works that was going to be before this, and it's put on the back burner, but maybe, I don't know. It's also, people are asking like James Gunn, will there be a season 3? And he's like, wait until the show's done before you ask me that. So I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And then he also said that the season finale of this show is as important as anything else to the Man of Tomorrow movie that we know now is coming out in 2027.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm so intrigued. Let me see.
Yeah.
Last thing I wanted to say about this scene is we'll talk about the scene this transitions into, but I really liked the fact they did this musical transition where to the moment where Adebayo gets a call, we'll talk about in a little bit. But they're playing the song Ain't That Kind of Girl by the Diamonds. And it goes from a soundtrack that's playing over hardcore taking down Chris to diegetic music that Adebayo is listening to and turns down when she gets the call. I just thought that was a really cool touch. Jean, do you want to set up the beatings and bookings?
Yeah, absolutely. At the station, Rick brutally beats Chris, who doesn't fight back, understanding where it is coming from, and also blaming himself. Hardcore, afraid for Chris's life, pushes Economos to book Chris officially in the system, knowing this will anger Rick, so that there is accountability for whatever happens to Peacemaker. Unable to kill him, Rick is forced to release him, as Chris's injuries would raise too many questions if made public. Adebayo and Vigilante pick him up and drive him home, when he insists he wants to be alone.
Yeah, so I said last episode, I thought Economos was shaming Hardcore, but now Hardcore is the one shaming Economos. She says,
right now I'm afraid Flag's going to kill him. Like, literally kill him. He won't admit it, but all of this, the surveillance, everything, is about revenge for Chris having killed Rick Jr.
I know.
So you gotta put Chris in the books.
Book him?
His fingerprints are on file, right?
I guess.
You have to book him, so there's an arrest record. Otherwise, he's just gonna disappear.
But they'll know it's me.
So?
They'll be miffed.
You were just judgmental about me trying to get my job back.
Yeah, but we exist on completely different moral spectrums. I'm famously a gigantic pussy. For me, just looking somebody directly in the eyes is an act of heroism.
Aaron, how are you feeling about Economos this episode? Are you proud of him? Are you ashamed for him?
I think he's playing catch up to the rest of the 11th Street kids and the risks he's willing to take, but I guess I'm a little bit proud of him for doing the right thing in the end. I think Economos has come a long way since where we saw him in season one, and it's an ongoing journey for him to battle his crippling anxiety.
Yeah, yeah, I can identify with that. Yeah. And Jean, you brought up Fleury's surprisingly moral stance. And I'm wondering, you know, I proposed before, I'm like, what if he is behind the Sons of Liberty and he's an alt-universe freedom fighter? I'm like, now I'm doubling down on that. Not really, but I would not be. I'm putting it out there just in case it's true, but I only think it's like 30% possible.
Okay. That would be cool. I'll be happy to see Fleury in a new light. Definitely. Mm. But again, it just goes to show, you know, like the show showing different sides of these people, you know? So still terrible person, yeah. Fleury.
I mean, I think just in that one line, it cast him in a new light, just saying like, it's a good thing you did booking him, you know, right. Just that one line changed the way I think about him. I'm like, oh, okay. And then later, you know, Sasha's the one, you would think she would be the by the book one because she's like, no jokes. I don't do jokes, you know, no humor. But Fleury, the one who's always just being completely out of line in the way he speaks, is the one who's actually like, no, let's not like just kill people.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Sasha is ready to kill, as you pointed out earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She volunteers. I can kill. Yeah. He's still being super offensive to Judo Master. And now this week about his size, he calls him a Duncan Munchkin. And I just want to point out, by the way, just because he says they don't clarify this in the episode, and there are a lot of people who don't seem to know that the word midget is considered by most people to be a slur. Just FYI. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just avoid using the word if you don't want to be offensive. The usual terms are, he says little person, which indeed I looked up Nutley's height, and I think he's like 3 inches shorter than me, which does technically make him like just on that side of being a little person. Or dwarf is a specific medical classification.
Right.
But yeah. Don't say the M word. Anyway, Rick, do you think, okay, Rick and Sasha, we talked a bit about this. Aaron, do you think Sasha's seductive act toward Rick is real, or do you think she's trying to get something? Like, she seemed to turn it on suddenly.
I think it's real, and I only say that because I don't have any kind of alternate motivation for her. I don't know what she wants out of life, and I think that that's maybe a failing on the part of the script, that I don't know what her motivations are as a character.
Yet,
but
yeah,
we might find out. But as far as I can tell, I think she really does have some sort of thing for Rick Black Sr.
What do you think, Sean?
I don't think it's real.
No?
I think if I had not seen the cyborg, I would have thought that it was real. But because I saw the cyborg and we're confirmed that she's a cyborg, I feel that she's not. I think she's working for someone else.
Yeah, I have to say, Aaron, you clocked first the humorlessness of her character.
Yes.
You know, in one of the early episodes that they were laying that out for us. And now I do wonder if that links into like it seems like so far they're being intentionally mysterious about her, you know, about her backstory. And obviously, yeah, it might tie into Batman or whatever because of the comics. But it just seems like we're intentionally not yet being told like, well, it was just revealed she's a cyborg at all. What parts of her are cyborg? How has that changed her? We don't know any of this stuff, which I'm guessing has to be reveals to come.
Yeah, these last three episodes are going to be just off the walls.
Yeah. I hope.
I'm excited. All right, on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk about the eagle hunting back.
Hey everyone, David here. We're almost done with Alien Earth, and I wanted to let you know about something that we've put together. We've created a season pass for our coverage. It's $10, one time, no recurring subscription. You can grab this whenever it works for you. What you get is ad-free access to all Alien Earth episodes, plus the bonus video analysis that I've already done, and several more background conversations and special episodes that I've got in planning. We put a lot of work into the episodes, and when it's all said and done, you're getting more than 10 podcasts for $10, which really is a pretty good value considering the amount of time and production work that we put into all the episodes. And look, we're an independent podcast, and having direct listener support like this means that we get to keep doing this kind of deep dive coverage that we all enjoy. It's pretty simple. So only if this works for you and your circumstances, no pressure at all. But if you've been enjoying Alien Earth coverage and want to support what we're doing while getting some extra content, the season pass is there for you. You can find the link in our show notes or head to lorehoundsnetwork.supercast.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for being part of this really great community.
Right. The eagle hunts back. While Chris is at the police station, Red St. Wild tries to shoot his shot at Eagly again. First, he tries to poison the bird with a mouse, but Eagly is distracted by Adebayo and Vigilante, leaving to go pick up Chris. When a fox takes the bait and dies instead, Eagly figures out that someone is trying to kill him. He takes to the air, and Red St. Wild pulls out an enormous punt gun. He's not taking any chances this time. He takes down the eagle circling overhead, but then, just as Economos described in the last episode, a second eagle swoops in from behind and knocks him over. Red St. Wild is down and surrounded by eagles, and it's confirmed that he was right. Eagly is the prime eagle. Under Eagly's mystic command, the pack of eagles pecks Red St. Wild to death. So, Metaduck confirmed. How are you feeling about John? Are you hoping that we're gonna get like Eagly and Crypto and
a team
who
up?
Else? Yeah, get a DC Pets thing going.
No,
no,
no. No. I don't want DC Pets. No.
Maybe in chapter three.
Maybe.
We have chapter one, Gods and Monsters. Chapter two, whatever. Chapter three, Pets.
Hold on, microphone moment.
Okay.
So last Wednesday, we made the decision to suspend production on the show to avoid further inflaming a tense situation at an emotional moment for our country. It is a decision we made because we felt some of the comments were ill-timed and thus insensitive. We have spent the last days having thoughtful conversations with Jimmy, and after those conversations, we reached the decision to return the show on Tuesday.
All right. I think... You just said marker, which for anyone who doesn't know is how we say this is something to take out. But I think we should actually leave that in since we started with it at the top.
Okay.
Thoughts?
I think the pressure
got
worked. To them. I think it works. So many people denouncing this act. I don't know what those conversations were, what Jimmy Kimmel agreed to, didn't agree to, what he said, what didn't say. But I do know there was... significant number of voices on social media, in the news, just in our country, period, the U.S. and around the world, calling this out for the bullshit that it is. And sometimes you have to get into good trouble. Mm. And this is one of those times.
Yeah.
People canceling their subscriptions, and not just regular people, you know, day-to-day people who work 9-to-5s or whatever, celebrities, you know. I saw Howard Stern this morning on his show said he's canceling his Disney Plus and not supporting what they're
Tatiana
doing.
Tatiana Maslany, She-Hulk, said it
She-Hulk said
it. A bunch of people, Mark Ruffalo or no, who? I don't know anyway. A bunch of people said it.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, we're going to leave in what we said at the beginning. We're going to leave in, this is breaking news as we're recording. And this week we're actually going to release this right after we're recording. So this might be breaking news to other people as well. But thanks for that update, Sean.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now about Peacemaker. Are you guys familiar with Dee Bradley Baker? Or I know you are familiar. Everyone is. But do you know the name? Does the name say anything to you? He is one of the most famous voice actors in the world, and he's done, you've definitely heard a lot of him. He's done everything, like he did all of the clone voices in The Bad Batch.
Oh, wow.
He did all of the animal voices in Avatar, The Last Airbender. These are two of the things he's most famous for, Star Wars and Aatla. And he voices Eagly. So there was an exchange in this episode that I thought was just particularly so good on his part. So I just wanted to play it just to have a Dee Bradley Baker appreciation moment.
Good, 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 good.
Eagly.
We're going to go get your dad, okay? We'll be back soon.
Bye, Eagly.
So, yeah, that's Dee Bradley Baker. I just wanted to shout him out because he does such an awesome job. And I think just a lot of people don't realize they're listening to one supremely talented man across all of these things. And I know, Aaron, you particularly like both, obviously, Star Wars, Bad Batch, and Aatla, Last Airbender.
Yeah, Last Airbender, I grew up on that, so I have all the love in the world for Dee Bradley Baker.
And I had no idea. So I really need to, catch up on my voice actors because, yeah, I should know who this person is. And it's like, huh, what? So, yeah, I need to do better.
And I'm going to be honest with people at home that we are re-talking through this whole Eagly section and Red St. Wild because I made a boo-boo and accidentally turned off the recording when we were talking about this stuff. So we're going to try to recreate this, but I might run through it a little faster
magic.
This time.
We're going to do it magic. Magic versus science.
So I'll just say what I said before as I looked it up. Eagles do eat carrion. This must have been an odorless poison. R.I.P. Mr. Fox and that other eagle. And I know, Aaron, you said foxes are your favorite animal.
Yeah, I said before that the closest I've ever come to getting a tattoo in my life was thinking about getting a fox tattoo. And cooler heads prevailed, and that didn't end up happening, but I thought about it for a hot minute.
That's funny. That's great.
And I told this story that before I started watching episode 5, I saw a message on Blue Sky that just said this episode ripped my heart out, and I guess that must have been about Vigilante, but at first I thought it was going to be about Eagly. But then as soon as I saw the eagle go down that easily, I'm like, that's not our boy.
That's not our boy.
Yeah,
and what's up with that big-ass gun?
Yeah,
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's the punt gun. James Gunn talked about it on the podcast. It was a real gun they used on set that they borrowed from a museum or something. But it's the type of gun that was invented in 1910, I think, and then outlawed 10 years later because basically it was used. First of all, you need like two people and a stand to use this. So Red St. Wild is a metahuman confirmed. And basically the way they would use it is they would just point it at a lake and shoot it and kill 50 ducks at once and then have to clean them all up. So
gosh,
that's some not, is that hunting? Is that, does that count as hunting? No,
no,
I don't think
doesn't.
So either.
It's sadistic is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And we talked about the collection of eagles. Apparently it's a soar of eagles or a convocation of eagles. And Aaron, you were saying that this storyline in general didn't do it for you.
No, it really didn't. As much as I love eagles because they're the mascot of my university, I just can't get on board with this whole Red St. Wild plotline.
Totally agree. They could have shown us Eagly being a meta in so many different ways. So
yeah.
I didn't need this. Didn't need this.
But it was, Jean, do you want to talk about the meme that Jessica shared in the Discord that we were laughing at?
Oh, yeah. It's like with Eagly, his whole plot is, you know, and there's a picture of Eagly with like space lasers and all these other things coming out. And it's so on point. It was so. It made me chuckle when I was at work. So, yeah. Because it's so right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that I like that, like, this weird, I like the concept of having this weird Eagly plot. Unless it's going to play into something that happens later, I'm like, yeah, what was the point?
Right. The execution.
Could have been done better. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, for me, that's a rare or an only fail for this show for me. I think it's the only thing that I think didn't hit in the show for me.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, totally.
And Eagly brings Chris a finger from Red St. Wild, which, yeah, we've seen him sharing his carry-on with him before with, you know, because he's trying to feed Chris because stupid humans don't know how to hunt. but I wonder if they're going to find this finger of Red St. Wild's in this cabin, you know? And I think, I don't know, Aaron, how much do you think of Red St. Wild's left outside?
And I want to say that finger is all that remains of Red St. Wild. I think that the flock of, or not the flock, the convocation of eagles really did a number on the guy.
maybe dental records, but yeah.
Maybe.
I think they're going to need that finger to ID what happened to Red St. Wild. And that's going to make Rick even more mad.
Yeah. Definitely.
So yeah, okay. We flew through our Eagly discussion again this time. What was said before shall remain sacred between the three of us and forever redacted because I pushed the wrong button at one point. Aaron, do you want to set
DoorDash.
Up?
Go ahead.
Now that he's been thoroughly rejected and seemingly betrayed by Harcourt, beaten and booked and sure to face more trouble, Chris decides he is done with the DCU. He and Eagly head through the door to Earth 2, where Chris closes the door behind him and informs his brother that he now has a rescue Eagle sidekick. He runs to Argus to reunite with Earth 2 Amelia. But little does he know, Judo Master followed them to the cabin when Chris left the station, and then followed them to the alternate universe.
So, yeah, where did he close the door is my question. He didn't see Judo Master sneak in behind him?
Yeah, how did he do that? That's what I want to know. He should have, if Judo Master went through the door right after them, then how come Chris didn't see him? Or even Eagly?
If any character has stealth powers on this show, I believe it's Judo Master. I called him a ninja. We did talk about this part before, too. I believe he could hide behind a plant or just like carry a plant in front of him, you know?
Gosh.
I think Chris would be like, I don't remember a plant in the QUC here. It must be that dickish neighbor dude who never says hi.
When are we going to see him again? He hasn't left the main dance.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah. I hope we get at least a peek through the door into his universe.
Me too.
And yeah, I think we were saying the Judo Master, he finally ran out of Cheetos this episode. What if they don't have hot Cheetos in the other universe? Is he going to freak out?
Yes.
Earth 2 is going to burn.
Mm-hmm.
For hot Cheetos.
For hot Cheetos. And his backstory we learn is he was trained by an old blind monk in the Himalayas, which is very Iron Fist meets Daredevil. sure, I'm happy with that tropey origin story. But I do think that in this other universe, assuming it is what we think it is, we're about to if assuming Judo Master made it through, and I know you guys talked about before, maybe he's out there wandering in the QUC, lost and starving, looking for Cheetos. But I'm assuming he made it through, and I think we're going to learn some interesting things about, because he's going to have a very different experience in this universe than Chris does.
Definitely.
I assume.
Yeah. One thing that occurred to me when we were talking about the sort of Creature Commandos tie-in with Rick Flag earlier was, is it going to be a miss if we have a dimension full of Nazis but no GI robot to deal with them?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I was thinking about GI robot this week. I was like, GI robot wishes.
We have 3 episodes to hopefully. Ooh, that would be so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun. Yeah, and there's no way for Chris to get back. Like, I guess they can get out, presumably, of the Earth 2 door back into the QUC, but they can't get through the door back to the DCU until, presumably,
somebody opens it.
Yeah, Amelia said she wants to, Nada Bio says she remembers, she saw Chris do it, so presumably she'll be able to recreate it. So we know they'll reopen the door, but for now, that's what they mean. He can't get back.
Yeah.
That there's just no door on that side of things. But I am, you guys are also relieved. I assume we're all relieved. He brought Eagly. And then Keith was just Keith was just like, oh, you have a pet eagle now. You're crazy. Whatever.
Really tells you a lot about alternate universe Chris and his eccentricness.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
I guess it tells you about main universe Chris too.
Yeah.
The rescue eagle.
Yeah. Although the Third Reich does have eagles in the have an eagle in the logo, so to speak,
that is
in
true.
That seal. Yeah. So it would be on brand. Do we think Chris, he runs to Amelia and it cuts the episode right before they embrace. Is he gonna have second thoughts about this, Amelia?
I don't think quite yet. I think that he's so much in this space of a fantasy dream world that he can't quite see what's right in front of him. I think that maybe by the last episode, we're going to see him start to come to terms with things, or maybe second to last episode would be a good time for him to wake up a little bit. But at this point, he's so in his own head about it that there's no seeing the light.
I agree.
Yeah, how do we think Harcourt is going to react when she sees that he's, I mean, I guess she already knows based on the note that's read at the end of the episode that he's pursuing a different Amelia since it didn't work out with her?
I'd be pissed.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
That would just be the worst thing in the world. You didn't even leave me for someone else. You left me for what you think is a better version of me.
Yeah. You left me for me. Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, to be fair, she did reject him, but still,
yeah.
You can't just replace me with me. I think he's obviously we all think she's going to. It's a nature versus nurture question, this other universe. Harcourt and anyone else who's over there, it's how much is just who they are and how much is that they have presumably led an entirely different life in this version.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm eager to get into this other world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very eager.
But meanwhile, we've got the aftermath of abandonment. You want to set us up, Sean?
Yeah. Back in the DCU, Adebayo and Vigilante discover Chris has left the universe and shut the door behind him. And they find a Cheeto-dusted note Judo Master left behind for Argus, explaining that he's followed. Adebayo calls the 11th Street kids together to catch them up and read the letter Chris left behind, telling them to turn the portal over to Argus to clear their own names. Vigilante is devastated at having been left behind without even a goodbye. But Harcourt is determined to go to this other universe and get him back. Adebayo saw Chris set up the door in the cabin, so she may be able to reproduce it. But Harcourt points out Argus will know the second they open the door. They need to go somewhere safe to do this.
So I would play the letter, the reading of the letter, but actually it's they're reading it over November Rain, which is a very expensive song. So yeah. I'll just read it for you instead. Ads, I'm trusting you to tell the others goodbye for me. I know you won't agree with what I'm doing, but I feel like it's the right thing. I've tried again and again to make up for my mistakes, but I'm not sure redemption is something that's truly possible, at least not here. So I'm going to make a life in the other world. I'm going to be a brother to my brother, a son to my dad, and I'm going to tell Amelia, yes, we'll work on this. I'll cherish life and overcome my trauma and be the good man there that I was never able to be here. Don't be bummed. I love you all, even hardcore after all that fucked up cunty bullshit she did. But I don't belong here. I think that if you and Hardcore and Economos turn this alien dimensional canister thing over to Argus, you'll be in their good graces enough to all get promoted. Then everyone will be happy. Love, Chris, and Eagly. And first of all, I'm starting to get mad at Chris for the way he's treating Vigilante. The whole thing on the way back where he was just kind of, he just calls on Vigilante when he wants, when he needs something, like to chop up a body, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's like ignoring him pointedly when they're all together. He sends, he knows that Vigilante thinks of him as a best friend, but he doesn't send him a goodbye, only Dadabio. And he doesn't even mention him. He's the one person he does not mention in this letter.
Yeah, I'll go back to what I said earlier in the season. Chris doesn't know how to have real male friendships. He just doesn't.
He's better to Economos than he is the Vigilante, though.
Yeah, but even Economos is not treated as Adebayo was treated.
No, but that's his bestie. That's fair.
I just think there's a macho thing going on that he has to work on as well. Like, he's working on all these parts of him, and that's one that he needs to work on as well. Opening up to someone who is not your brother, who's not your father, who's, you know, who's been a friend to you, and being honest with them. So I'm not surprised that he treats Vigilante like shit.
Yeah, I really hope we get a scene this season where Vigilante stands up for himself against Chris a little bit and demands his worth. I mean, this is someone who's always been there for you, and you got to start treating him like that, because people aren't always going to be there for you if you keep dismissing them and treating them like garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think if he meets another, he keeps talking about meeting another himself in the other universe. Do you think if he meets another Adrian in the other universe, he'll love him more than he loves Chris?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's one to think about.
I mean, that's, is he a narcissist like that, or... Or is he just a...
Well, I think narcissism applies to everyone in this show to some degree.
And the world.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Him crying, breaking down like that and on a buyer's shoulder.
That was sad.
It broke me, yeah.
That was sad.
Oh, who knew he had feelings like that? He had feelings like that, I don't think.
And I think Hardcore deciding to go into the alternate dimension, the other, to Earth 2, go through the door.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure she was going to make that decision as they were reading the letter. You know? I just thought, like, it surprised me that she said, we have to go get him back.
So I want to
know why she feels that she has to go get him back.
Because I've always thought Hardcore was more moral than you've thought her. So for me, that's, to me, it tracks for who I think she is.
But why? If he's in Earth 2 now, trying to lead a better life, be a better person, why?
I mean, it's clearly not the answer to go to another, to run away to another universe. But I also think that whatever she says, I think she does. She is actually. She's in love with him, I would even say.
Okay.
Yeah. We got to figure out what happened on that party boat. I think that's a missing piece to all of this.
Yeah, they've been setting that up. That's got to be a cold open coming in the next three episodes somewhere.
Yeah.
We were worried about Vigilante and Adebayo together, but now they're kind of low-key becoming my new favorite duo. Like, first we have Adebayo. She says, like, she's giving in to the Adrian vortex. She's like, you know, if he wants to talk about his, in the credit scene, it's Manta Ray facts. Wait, and that was a nice flashback to Vigilante and his happiest, you know, just and just to point out the group of manta rays, it's not a school, which is what you call fish. I had to look it up because obviously a Vigilante said it can't be right. It's a squadron of manta rays, and obviously all the other facts are false, but those are really obviously false. But, you know, we saw, so he's the one who warns Adebayo that a potential customer thinks she's a sex worker. But don't worry, he only kills Johns. Do you think that's foreshadowing? Do you think he's going to kill the man who called her at some point?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's even going to meet up with the guy. I hope not.
I mean, maybe for now she knows, obviously. She's not going to go expecting that. Right. But I just wonder if they've set that up for a reason.
Yeah. That would be a good bit. The whole Vigilante animal facts bit has been my favorite running joke this season, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It just also, I mean, just a lot of credit to Freddie Stroma, who plays Vigilante. Just the way he delivers this stuff is so good. And he also delivered that really emotional moment well. And then Adebayo comforting him. Like, are they going to be new besties? She deserves his bestieship more than Chris does, to be honest.
I think it would be interesting to see the two of them develop into a little bit more of an on-screen relationship. We feel the love from the past season, but I do want to see a little bit of a dynamic duo between Adebayo and Vigilante when they're going to rescue Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll be fun. I'm guessing Adebayo took Judah Master's note, so
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, but Argus knew he was at the cabin, so are they, yeah, is there any way of them knowing what happened to him without the note, knowing that he was there? We did see in this episode, I paused when Rick was reading on the computer, and he was reading about quantum mechanics. And basically about how they were conducting experiments in the DCU to move objects between universes using quantum entanglement, more or less that. So I wonder, that's got to be, they planted that, obviously, as an Easter egg, people who pause. That's got to be, like, maybe he's going to find his own way through or something, showing that he does not actually worry about opening a rift. He just wants to get, he just wants to get Chris.
He's not a villain.
He's such a villain. Villain, say what? Okay, you mentioned Jean Harcourt. She said something about, like, let's go somewhere safe. Do we think she could possibly be going to see someone who knows a lot about this tech? In which case, like, could we? I don't want to get my hopes up. And it's fine if we don't. But could we see perhaps like Mr. Terrific or even Lex? Or might she even go to Waller with this? Or am I just trying to insert guest stars in?
I mean, my gut tells me no. Right now, my gut tells me no. Because I think when she says let's get to a safe place, she might have places that she knows that nobody's watching out for, you know, like hidden, you know, safe houses or something of that nature, you know? That's what I thought of when she said that. So my guess is no.
Okay. What's your thought, Aaron?
I'll have to agree with Jean. I think that it's not going to go stray too far. I don't know that we're going to get too much more out of it.
Okay. All right. And, we also see one other thing I want to point out. The top trio in this episode takes down a kaiju. The kaiju looks exactly like the same one we got in Superman, but it's obviously a different place and time. It's in, you know, Evergreen and rather than in Metropolis. But, well, first of all, the fact that the top trio took it down and not Superman and the Justice Gang, I think shows what you guys were saying earlier, that it doesn't look like there's a Superman in the Justice Gang in this universe for whatever reason. It's just the top trio. But I'm wondering, could there still be like a Lex Luthor or something who released it for, because he's the one who released it in Superman via. Could he be doing it for similar reasons to destabilize, you know, the Nazi regime?
I would like to think so, that somebody's doing it, but we have to get it to Earth 2. Take me to Earth 2. Let's go.
There's a gold mine of lore waiting for us under the surface in that universe. Yeah.
What are your predictions for the last three episodes at this point, now that we know what we know now? Or the next episode, at least. We know, obviously, it seems like next episode, everyone's going to be heading to the other dimension. It's going to be a party in Earth 2.
I think they find out that Chris is not their Chris next episode.
You think that the Earth 2 people like Keith and his... Yes. Okay. Aaron, do you have any predictions?
I think we're finally going to meet Vigilante's family next episode. And my big prediction is that the dimensional door is going to get set up in his family home.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think based on the teaser, I think that there's, I mean, we know his mom's supposed to be introduced this season, so that would make sense. But then I just wonder, like, why is that better than the hotel room? Yeah. Curious. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Well, three episodes left. Three. Dropping weekly on Thursday evenings in the U.S., Fridays elsewhere. Look out, as usual, for episodes on Mondays. Next week's title is Ignorance of Chris, which I think could be the subtitle of the entire season. Yeah, we know that the last three episodes are supposed to be blowing up, and obviously Foundation and Alien Earth are done or wrapping up. So if people are just joining us because of that, then welcome to the Peacemaker Party. Glad to have you. If you are curious about our previous DCU coverage, we did a DCEU funeral and Peacemaker season one recap. You can find links to all that in the show notes. And Marvel fans, Eyes of Wakanda is out. We talked about it earlier. Marvel Zombies is next. It's releasing.
We did it, Alicia.
We did Eyes of Wakanda. Now we'll see how Marvel Zombies goes. It's releasing September 24th on Disney Plus. So we have a recording date. We won't promise it, but we're planning to cover this the following week. Aaron, what's going on with Radioactive Ramblings? Gen V has started up.
Gen V has started. Before I get into that, just thank you for having me on again. I love talking about Peacemaker with you guys. Gen V, we are planning on doing full coverage. The first three episodes are going to be one episode, and then it'll be covering the individual episodes as the season finishes off. We have not yet recorded our episode for the first three installments of season two, but it is coming soon. We will hopefully have it out before episode four comes out, but it's looking a little doubtful because of scheduling conflicts. But I do promise that we will have Gen V coverage for you.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. I'm enjoying the first three episodes. I think maybe even a little more than you. So I'm looking forward to it. Check out there's a link in the show notes for Radioactive Ramblings, but there's also in the link tree in the show notes, you'll find links to all the other affiliates, including Nevermind the Music, where psychology meets music, and Properly Howard, just finishing up their Bacon-wrapped movie review season about Kevin Bacon and all of his colleagues, Will Shift Dust and the Dune Train, Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, and Sean, what's going on the main feed, on the Lorehounds feed?
All right, so we had Foundation Season 3 coverage with John and Marilyn. Season 3 just finished. Season 4 has been renewed. Yay! A Season 3 wrap-up episode will be coming to folks this week. And David is leading the weekly coverage of Alien Earth, which is, I think, the finale is this week as well. So that should be fun.
Yeah. Fun and horrible. Midge supremacy. I'm Midge supremacy. Oh,
God. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is the most dangerous, the most evil thing on the show, and they're baking cakes. for the alien eye. This
we're
is
putting, we're putting a bow on her. She's a baby girl.
This is out of control. This is out of control. Ah,
gotta respect Mitch. You know, she sees everything. If you have feedback about this show or about anything Marvel or DC, please send that to comicsversuscomicsvs@thelorehounds.com. You can also find the link in the link tree to our Discord in the show notes. And we have a special forum, a DC forum, set up currently under current shows. If you're listening later, you'll find it under franchises, where there's spoiler chats per episode of Peacemaker. If you are enjoying our coverage, please do share it with your friends. Get your friends to watch Peacemaker. Get your friends to listen to us talk about Peacemaker. It is deeply appreciated. Ratings yes. and reviews, positive ratings and reviews, also deeply appreciated. But thank you to all of our listeners. Just you listening at all and spending this time with us. We don't take it for granted. It means a lot to us. So thank you. Supercast and Patreon are options for people who want to go a little bit deeper into the Lorehounds world. On those, you get ad-free access to our podcasts and bonus content. There are season passes if you only want, for example, the Alien Earth episodes with the extra Alien Earth episodes. You can do that for $10. But you can also join monthly starting at $5 a month, and you'll get all of those extra episodes plus extra What You Watching episodes, our Second Breakfast and 11Z monthly features. We're just going to record tomorrow our September musicals episode, which is going to be comparing the two versions of The Producers from the 60s, the Gene Wilder one, and the one from 2005 with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick. It was my first time watching the 60s one.
Oh, wow.
It was fun. Okay. Yeah, it was fun. It's still offensive, intentionally so, but fun.
Intentionally, yes.
And next week, the vote will be open for only a week for this year's Spooktober franchise we're going to cover. So watch out for that. Now, I asked Aaron what musical genre last week's musical genre was amiss. So I asked Aaron for a suggestion. He said soft rock. We don't quite have soft rock. So what I went for instead is the casual folder. I never know what this is going to sound like until I play it. For obvious reasons, I chose the park dance. Oh, okay. This is very soft. Thank you to our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Doove71, Athena Agileya, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian. And thank you to all of our listeners, to all of our subscribers especially, and most of all, our highest tier of subscribers, the Lore Masters, Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian P., SC, Peter OH, Adam S., Nancy M., Doove71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Garrett C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andre B., Kwang Yu, Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Listu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Carly S., Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K., Bobby C., Rocky Zim, and sorry we missed you for so long, Jessica H., Red Zippy, the TCS, and always last, Adrian. Aaron, any final thoughts?
Wow.
I'll say it again, James Gunn, keep on rocking.
There you go.
What about you, Joe?
Yeah. I have thoughts for, Kevin Feige. Man, people make mistakes. It's okay to admit you make a mistake, and then you correct yourself and then just move on. So just give the people what they want. Own up to your mistake. Recast T'Challa. That's it.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Now, manta ray derives from the Latin for pancake of the sea. That's where we get the phrase, a manta ray never forgets. You know, when manta ray is born, they come out in the shape of a burrito. Can we go to Taco Bell?